On the bulletin board in the front hall of the hospital where I work, there appeared an announcement. Yeshi Dandan, it read, will make rounds at 6 o'clock on the morning of June 10th. The particulars were then given, followed by the notation, Yeshi Dandan is the personal physician to the Dalai Lama. Now, I am not so leathery a skeptic that I would knowingly ignore an emissary of the gods. Not only might this cold-bloodedness be inimical to one's earthly being, it could take care of eternity as well. Thus, on the morning of June 10th, I joined the clutch of white coats waiting in the small conference room adjacent to the ward selected for the rounds. The air in the room is heavy with ill-concealed dubiety and suspicion of bamboozlement. At this precise moment, he materializes, a short, golden, barrelly man, dressed in a sleeveless robe of saffron and maroon. His scalp is shaven. The only visible hair is a scanty black line above each hooded eye. He bows in greeting while his young interpreter makes the introduction. Yeshi Dandan, we are told, will examine a patient selected by a member of the staff. The diagnosis is unknown to Yeshi Dandan as it is to us. The examination of the patient will take place in our presence, after which we will reconvene in the conference room where Yeshi Dandan will discuss the case. We are further informed that for the past 2 hours, Yeshi Dandan has purified himself by bathing, fasting, and prayer. I, having breakfasted well, performed only the most desultory of ablutions and given no thought at all to my soul, glanced furtively at my fellows. Suddenly we seem like a soiled, uncouth lot. The patient has been awakened early and told that she was to be examined by a foreign doctor and had been asked to produce a fresh specimen of urine. So when we enter her room, the woman shows no surprise. She has long ago taken on that mixture of compliance and resignation that is the face of chronic illness. This was to be but another in the endless series of tests and examinations. Yeshi Dandan steps to the bedside while the rest of us stand apart watching. For a long time he gazes at the woman, favoring no part of her body with his eyes, but seeming to fix his glance at a place just above her supine form. I too study her. No physical sign or obvious symptom gives a clue to the nature of her disease. At last, he takes her hand, raising it in both of his. Now he bends over the bed in a kind of crouching stance, his head drawn into the collar of his robe. His eyes are closed as he feels for her pulse. In a moment, he has found the spot, and for the next half hour, he remains thus, suspended above the patient like some exotic golden bird with folded wings, holding the pulse of the woman beneath his fingers, cradling her hand in his. All the power of the man seems to have been drawn down into this one purpose. It is palpitation of the pulse raised to this state of ritual. From the foot of the bed where I stand, it is as though he and the patient have entered a special place of isolation, of apartness, about which a vacancy hovers, and across which no violation is possible. After a moment, the woman rests back on her pillow. From time to time, she raises her head to look at the strange figure above her, and then sinks back once more. I cannot see their hands join in correspondence that is exclusive, intimate, his fingers receiving the voice of her sick body through the rhythm and throb she offers at her wrist. All of a sudden, I am envious. not of him, not of Yeshe Danan for his gift of beauty and holiness, but of her. I want to be held like that, to be touched so, to receive. And I know that I, who have palpitated 100,000 pulses, have not felt a single one. At last, Yeshe Danan straightens, gently places the woman's hand on the bed, and steps back. The interpreter produces a small wooden bowl and two sticks. Yeshe Danan pours a portion of the urine specimen in the bowl and proceeds to whip the liquid with the two sticks. He does this for several moments until a foam is raised, and then, bowing above the bowl, he inhales the odor three times. He sets down the bowl and turns to leave. All this while, he has not uttered a single word. As he nears the door, the woman raises her head and calls out to him in a voice at once urgent and serene. "Thank you, doctor," she says, and touches with her other hand the place he had held on her wrist, as though to recapture something that had visited there. Yeshe Danan turns back for a moment to gaze at her, and then steps into the corridor, rounds her at an end. We are seated once more in the conference room. Yeshe Danan speaks now for the first time, in soft Tibetan sounds that I have never heard before. He has barely begun when the young interpreter begins to translate. The two voices continuing tandem, a bilingual fugue, the one chasing the other. It is like the chanting of monks. He speaks of the winds coursing through the body of the woman, currents that break against barriers, eddying. These vortices are in her blood, he says, the last spendings of an imperfect heart. Between the chambers of her heart, long, long before she was born, a wind had come and blown open a deep gate that must never be opened. Through it charged the full waters of her river, as the mountain stream cascades in the springtime, battering, knocking loose the land, flooding her breath. Thus he speaks and is silent. "May we have the diagnosis?" a professor asks. The host of these rounds, the man who knows, answers. "Congenital heart disease," he says, "interventricular septal defect with the resultant heart failure." "A gateway in the heart, I think, that must not be opened. Through it charge the full waters that flood her breath." So here then is the doctor listening to the sounds of the body to which the rest of us are deaf. He is more than doctor, he is priest. Now and then it happens, as I make my own rounds, that I hear the sounds of his voice, like an ancient Buddhist prayer, its meaning long since forgotten, only the music remaining. And then a jubilation possesses me, and I feel myself touched by something divine.